I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
The other thing I should say is I tried to play Warhammer when I was a kid. That sounded like deep to people sure. like stats. I just didn't understand it, is the point.
These are the kind of left turns that the Fighting Cock podcast yeah, takes. Welcome back to another bonus pod on the front three. I know we said we were going to be doing them every week. Mm-hmm. Didn't quite work out. We had Rory on first, of course, talking about Chelsea. Boom. This week, we've got Gary Flav, or better known as Flav.
Gary Goals.
The Fighting Cock podcast and Ball Street.
Wow. Yeah, cheers. Thank you. Thank you very much. I've been a big fan of the front three for a long time.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the only place I actually listen to actual football chat.
Wow.
Because you guys know what you're talking about. And
some
like we spoke,
yeah.
Loz, we spoke a while back, Loz, and you said, "Oh, yeah, it'd be good to get you on." And I don't think I'd be any good in that at all. I don't understand or get much enjoyment out of tactics or football at that level. But I find it interesting to listen to. I just can't talk about it with any authority.
We had this chat the other night.
Yeah, I had this chat last night with someone else who said, punditry is not very good. And I was sort of saying part of a pundit's job is to break it down and make it simple enough that anyone feels they can take part in the conversation.
Mm.
So maybe it's just that our punditry isn't good enough.
No, I don't think so. I think you look at Gary Neville and say whatever you think about him, and his stock has dropped since the Valencia debacle. But he knows how to break it down for the everyman, the layman, and for that you can appreciate his ability.
Jamie Carragher.
He's got something. As footballers, I hated and detested both of them.
Yeah.
And as human beings, I hate and detest them still. But I appreciate how they talk about football whenever it is that I do watch Sky, which isn't very often.
You don't have to like them, do you?
No, you don't have to like them. We'll talk a bit more about football coverage and that sort of stuff, tactics and all that as we go on. But thank you so much for coming on. The idea of these bonus podcasts, if this is the first one we listen to, is we kind of want to get people on that we like, people that we know that we think are interesting. You might have something interesting to say about football. Sort of just have a general chat. So I suppose the best place to start is talking about Tottenham.
Great.
Obviously you're a Spurs fan, you run the Fighting Cock podcast. What are some of your earliest memories of being a Spurs fan?
My earliest memory is being at a League Cup game with my dad. I was 4 years old. It would have been 1985. And I think we were playing Bournemouth. I'm not 100% sure. And it was literally just the lights. It was just the twinkling floodlights. You know, cold night air, and being with my old man and my mum, and I lasted about 20 minutes and apparently fell asleep in the footwell. I don't know what my dad was allowing me to sleep in a footwell at a football match during the 80s, but so
it was a different time.
So it goes, yeah. So that's kind of my first actual memory, but as a kind of cognitive young human being that I became, it was just being in the pub with my dad and his mates and being given my first beer. And
how old were you?
About eight.
Makes sense.
Well, this is a collective experience over years, but all of those things kind of mesh into one because it was just being part of something that was greater than my family and greater than myself and football for a long time, and still to this day, that's what's important to me when thinking about football. It's the social aspect to it. It's the bonding and sharing a love of a football club that. And the kind of learning how to do that came from when I was very, very young. So it really, more of my memories about being in pubs beforehand or wherever it is that people come together and talk about football.
So for that reason, do you think you'd love football just as much if you were a fan of any other club?
Absolutely, 100%.
So in that sense, Spurs are they're special, but they're special out of almost pure chance.
I was so lucky. Mm-hmm. I was so lucky because I could have been a Yeovil fan, mm-hmm. or I could have been someone, a team, you know, people complain about their teams and the shit that goes on, can I swear?
Mm-hmm.
On the pitch. And you see Arsenal fans moaning and whinging about Wenger and all the pathetic excuses that they are as football fans.
Audible smile.
Yeah. That you think that there's clubs out there with real problems. So I was very, very, very lucky that my old man and my granddad before him supported Tottenham. But it wasn't Spurs at the beginning that drew me in. Like a lot of people sort of, they'll watch or see a player on telly and they think, yeah, that's my team. Mm. When I was a kid going through the Panini sticker books, the ones that stood out to me were Millwall and Chelsea, because I'm inherently racist. Mm. It was the Lions on.
Diggs coming in. Yeah. Like that, yeah.
I was. It was the Lions on their football pitch. And yeah, kids like lions, don't they?
And a chicken doesn't tend to sort of,
it doesn't pop have the same out draw, to a child. Does
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's the same with Liverpool. I felt the same about Liverpool. I was like, play live a bird. Yeah. Like what? It's a dead bird. It's an extinct bird. Do you know what I mean?
And I just knew from a very young age there was something special about Tottenham because it was a word that was heard in my household often. I've got five brothers and obviously the supporting Spurs came from my dad, but we used to talk about Tottenham more than anything else.
Are you the most passionate of the Tottenham supporting brothers, or is there someone who's more
they would rip more. Me a new arsehole
is someone more Tottenham than you, should we put it that
I,
way?
I think I'm
the most Tottenham.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I'm the most Tottenham out of all of us, but in terms of, you know, we go to Europe, we go home games, we don't go to away games much, but we did when I was much younger. Everyone's got jobs and whatnot, but yeah, we're very much a Spurs family, yeah. And anybody coming into that social circle who isn't Tottenham finds it quite difficult. My little brother actually half brother, because he's been a few marriages. My dad is rubbish at marriage.
Or great at it, and just wanted to share that around. You never know.
Yeah. I've seen his penis. He ain't.
Yeah, yeah. So he must be really good at marriage then. Yeah.
Different territory.
When he says
he's seen his penis, he means he's looked down on his own body. He's like, oh yeah, genetics.
Yeah, we've got a name for my dad's penis, but I won't go into it.
Sure. It's Flav.
Sorry, I don't know where that's come from.
The fighting cock.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah. My little stepbrother came back in with the old JVC Arsenal shirt. I think for some reason he decided it'd be a good idea for him to support Arsenal, and that shirt was burnt in the garden.
Was it really?
Yeah, genuinely burnt.
What made him? I mean, surely he knew that was a bad idea.
I think he was rebelling. I think he was rebellious.
Yeah, he did it out of spite.
I don't know.
Do you think it sounds like when you're talking about football, then some of those early memories, and it's almost quite romantic. You're talking about kind of the collective sort of passion that it is, as opposed to the club. That's the sort of stuff that's standing out for you.
It's still part of the club, though, isn't it?
No, of course, but you know, football as a whole, you know, the love of the game in a way.
Mm.
Is there a frustration for you in the way football's changed and evolved since then to sort of where it is in the modern day?
Yeah, I mean, I think most people that have lived through the changes that Sky Sports and the Premier League has brung, you know, kind of express some dissatisfaction of the way the game is, whether that be ticket prices, the kind of the reduction in atmosphere, you know, there's all kinds of things that you can moan about, and I was very angry about that for a long time. I used to look around White Hart Lane at times, and it was so insipid that I kind of was very, I used to get frustrated. I used to walk away from the ground thinking, what was that, you know, why does no one else feel as passionate as I did? And that was the kind of very naive way to look at it, because everybody was, there's so many issues that we could go into, but I think the biggest one is that the more expensive football became, the harder it was for young people to get into the stadium. And what you saw, that season tickets became a kind of a rarity. You know, it's so difficult to become a season ticket holder at Tottenham. And gradually, year on year, the average age of that crowd at White Hart Lane got older and older. And I'm 35 now. I'm less vocal than I was when I was 25. I was interested in atmosphere and passion and noise and getting one over on the other lot and that kind of thing. But the older I get, I'm less interested in that. I still want to see it, but I'm not as part of it as I used to be.
Yeah.
There has been a change. I'm not saying let's go back to the 80s where stadiums were falling apart and there was fighting in the streets and all of that, but what we've become so obsessed with the competition, I think, finishing the top four, the players that fill the shirts rather than the shirt itself, that it's natural that you're going to, your how passionate that you feel about your football club is going to be lived vicariously through the players. And I think that's dangerous, because it really, what's special about your football club is the traditions and the relationship you've built with the club, and it's so much more than the players that are employed.
So for that reason, then you must love Pochettino, because I got a documentary coming out this weekend on the Football Republic. Sorry,
that's fun.
And I didn't. I'll be honest. I sort of approached it thinking Pochettino and Spurs were. I didn't know anything about them. That's why I wanted to make the documentary. And there's a really great quote that Jack Pitbrook told us about, and he covers him quite closely. He's a journalist for
The Independent.
Independent.
Yeah, he's great.
And he's a great writer, and he seems quite close to Pochettino in that sense. Anyway, the point is, he said, Pochettino says, when you sign a contract with Spurs, you sign a contract to train, not to play.
That's right.
And for that reason, I almost feel like, you know, Liverpool have found Klopp, they found their perfect manager. I feel a little bit like Pochettino is that for Spurs in that sense, because he brings out something from the old days, because he's full of Bielsa and those sort of like passionate old guys. Comes from a country where they completely know what it's all about, Argentina, and they really care about their football. And he comes from a city which always felt like it was... It has a similar vibe to Spurs in that it always feels like it's being told, well, you're not as good as, or, you know, you're not Chelsea, or you're not Arsenal, or you're not Millwall, you know, any of those guys.
Yeah.
So he almost completely gets it.
Yeah. I didn't know anything about him, really, before he joined Spurs. I knew he'd done really good at Southampton, and I read a bit about his time at Espanyol before that. I did, out of the four managers that we talked about on the Fighting Cop podcast, he was the last that I wanted.
Yeah.
I went to Frank de Boer, Santini, Capello over him.
Not LVG?
No, I don't think he'd left by the time we were having that conversation. He'd gone and signed for Man United, but I probably would have taken him over him. And instinctively, you knew something had changed. And the first thing you saw on the pitch was that we were trying harder. People were running, and we were burning out, but you could see the effort on the pitch. And it's not difficult to impress a Tottenham fan. Genuinely, all we need is our players to run. And some of the the cult heroes we've got, and I'm sure this is the same at most clubs, aren't the best footballers. Stefan Freund, we still sing about him now on occasion, and he was pony. Mm-hmm. He used to run his arse off, and it was kind of all you needed. So I think, yes, so we saw that. That was the instant gratification of seeing your team work harder, and then the results started coming. And once you've got those two things, and he doesn't talk much. I think...
I love that about it. Like there's, and I mean, it's not only that. His English is actually quite good. And some people sort of say it's because he's a foreigner. Apparently, he's actually like very, very fluent.
Right. My gut feeling was that he didn't want to be misinterpreted.
Yeah.
But... he can speak English, obviously you can see it. He wouldn't be able to communicate with the players and get them to play for him if he couldn't communicate with them, sorry. So, he's perfect. He's perfect for Tottenham, and I'm genuinely, it does concern me that one day he's not going to be there, and I don't know when that might be. Hopefully he'll be with us another 15 years like Wenger was at Arsenal, but it is a concern, because what do you go back to? Tim Sherwood.
I mean, if Tim Sherwood picked up, though,
he could come back.
What you sort of want is we had this conversation, and it's hard to come to a conclusion, because everyone sort of goes, well, hopefully you'll have laid the groundwork for the next manager, or another manager can pick up from there. But you do sort of get that feeling with Pochettino that it is also partly the man. Do you know? Like, it's the same with Klopp.
Oh,
it's kind of like, I went to Dortmund just before Christmas, and they were sort of saying, well, it's not the same without him. Like, we want the same atmosphere, but because that one man isn't standing there, it's completely different. And I guess that's the concern for Spurs, isn't it? And for Levy as well. Like, Levy must be sort of feeling a little bit like things are slightly out of time, because he wants that stadium so Pochettino can get the money to be able to do all
this. I'm not worried about him leaving anytime soon. I think because we've got everyone signed down to new contracts, because it is an exciting time for Spurs fans and the club as a whole, I'm not worried about him leaving. But I think his appointment shows how crucial it is to get the right man at the right time, because the impact he can have is just so incredible. And we saw, I think Jay Rodriguez came out today and said,
best manager, best man
I've ever played for, all this sort of stuff. So he obviously has an impact on the players. I mean, from your perspective, Flav, how exciting is it now to be a Spurs fan compared to recent times, when it always felt like it could get going, it was going to come to this tipping point? Now it feels like it actually might.
I'm excited, I mean, how can you not be excited? I mean, we nearly won the league last year. Oh, we never nearly won it. We never going to, were we? But it felt like we could, right? And that's the first time in my life It was actually possible for once. And this season, you know, you could worry about how effectively we were going to perform this year, because that all of that kind of energy was expelled when we kind of drew at Chelsea or lost to, or drew at West Brom the week before. And it was more than that. It's just, I kind of feel proud of Tottenham. Mm-hmm. That's a weird thing. How do you feel proud of something that isn't? That's a company, essentially. That's what Tottenham is, and it's depressing to say. It's private a company, and these are employees. But it's the nature of modern football. But I feel proud when someone asks me who do you support, and I go, I'm Spurs. They're interested in talking to you for a start. What do you think of Pochettino? All that same stuff we're talking about here. But more, there's that begrudging respect from Arsenal fans, Chelsea. Are you actually decent? Whereas before, you'll know. It's bad at times. I grew up.
Not easy being a Spurs fan.
I lived in Holloway. I went to school in Highbury Grove, and this was during the 90s when Spurs were absolute dog shit and Arsenal were very good, and it was hellish. And this is part of the reason why I hate Arsenal fans so much. It's not even about their football team; it's them as human beings. Yeah. Sorry.
To back up slightly, so we're talking about Spurs, and we're talking about where the club's coming from and the way they're sort of changing. We're talking about some of those frustrations of modern football. You've been involved in the 1882 movement.
Yeah.
Talk to us about that and what you were trying to achieve with that in terms of the club.
So at the time when we set up 1882 movement, it was essentially an atmosphere group, really. I don't want to say singing group. Singing section sounds a bit, wanky.
Would you call it a choir?
Yeah, we used to have the Shelfside Choir as well at Tottenham. Yeah. So the idea originally, we saw this video that Lech Poznan were supporting their under 12s and go out with flares and bouncing and everything. I mean, even I think that's a little bit sad. But it's under 12s.
Sad.
Children. But there was something about that passion that I just wanted to replicate, and have since kind of moved away from the ultras movement in Europe, and don't think that's for English football. I don't think it works, and I don't feel that that's genuine and authentic. And I can understand the resistance from old school people, because when we set up 1882, we did get a lot of resistance from some section of Spurs fans who thought that we were moving away from the traditions of Tottenham.
What are those traditions?
I think they're the same traditions of old school football in England anyway. I think it's you're not like a singing group. You kind of move with the feeling of the game, and you sing and you're passionate, but there are times when silence does well. I don't know what I'm trying to say, and I don't really know what the traditions, that's why I'm struggling.
That's what I'm wondering.
There was like opposition to it.
I know that they're not, it's not flares, big flags, and it's for some, like Liverpool do it well, but whatever it was, there was some resistance to it. And what we decided to do, we just wanted to bring back some of the enjoyment. It's so difficult in modern stadia that you can't sit with your group of mates because everyone has their allocated tickets. There aren't sections of the ground that you can kind of buy in bulk if you're that way inclined. Homesdale Fanatics at Crystal Palace did it brilliantly because their ground was half empty when they started that in 2005. Fuck all people were going to Palace. So they had this section and they made it their own, and it is now the loudest end. Whatever you think of Palace and the ultra section they have there, it's the loudest end.
It's a great end to be in as well. I think not only as a sort of as a supporter of Palace, but I've been there like 10, 15 times over the past couple of seasons, and they sort of welcome you in as well, which is quite nice.
Yeah, I mean, it is nice. And so what we wanted to do, we wanted to bring that fun element back, and there was no room at Tottenham for first team games to do that. So we decided to focus on youth games. So we thought, wouldn't it be funny? Actually, that was the idea. The first instance, it would be funny, wouldn't it, if you go to an FA Cup, a fourth round game at Charlton, middle of the week, miles away. But it'd be funny if we could get a number of people come down and just sing from like the first team. And for whatever reason, this was the first year we started the podcast. We didn't know how many people were listening to us. It could have been 10, could have been 1,000, whatever it was. And 250 people turned up at this pub in Banker and Barrow Boy in London Bridge. And I was amazed that there were so many people that were singing. It was like an away game. It was incredible. We got on the train, we sung all the way there, and we supported the youth players, and it was great. And the most important part of that bit was that at the end, the youth players came to us and were celebrating and sung a song with us. And you're thinking, for someone who admired ultras culture for so long and what was happening in Germany and seeing the interaction between players and fans, it was like, this is amazing. So we did it again. We did it at White Lane and we did it again. And it just got bigger and bigger. We took 600 to, it was 250 first time, 600 to the Barcelona next gen game at White Hart Lane. And then eventually it was like, well, we're playing the Europa League and no one turns up to that. We were getting 20,000 gates at White Hart Lane. So we could take a block in the east upper, in block J, where no one sat. It was always that bit. So we bought that block and we filled it out and we sung. And that was when the sort of some of the criticism came. Because I think some of the Spurs, section of Spurs fans, and I understand it and I agree with it completely and wouldn't have done it again in hindsight, but they felt like we were saying that they were shit and this is how you support your club.
Was that true though?
I think there was definitely an element of it. Yes.
So you did do it out of frustration.
It was frustration. I just regret that now though, because I don't, we're all Spurs fans. You know, there is no right way to support your football club.
How do you go about addressing that problem then? Because
you can't go around the ground, can you, and sort of go, do you mind if we have a little sing-song?
But I think it's a valid thing that everyone seems to feel. There is that sort of alienation almost. There is that connection lacking with the players, lacking with the club in some respects. You obviously were trying to sort of establish that, like you're saying, with these youth teams, getting that connection back. How do you think football's moving in the right direction, or what can they do to move in the right direction to kind of combat that?
So should I answer?
It's a conversation.
Yeah, it's just I think for a long time fans felt so disenfranchised with the game. It was us and them. I felt like that for so long. It was the football club. It was the Premier League. It was Sky Sports. It was the money making machine, and then it was us who just spewed our money into this.
Can I also ask just very quick? Is that also partly down to the people who are at the top? Like, did you feel disenfranchised from people like Alan Sugar and people like that?
Yeah,
who were also very much pushing that new generation, like. You know, other clubs, maybe they saw the immediate benefit of it. So United saw the immediate benefit of the Premier League.
Mm.
And I think Sugar wanted to do a similar thing. Like, he wanted to make Spurs into that commercial asset and sort of, you know, sell them out and make them, like, you know, he was into TV, he was into all these kind of things.
Yeah, it was before Sugar, actually. We were the first team to float on the stock exchange, which opened the floodgates for clubs to essentially move away from being membership organisations to commercial entities. So yeah, very much so. I mean, and you understand it. You know, look how much money's in the game. Look how good the quality of football is. Look how safe our stadiums are. I understand all that, but it didn't stop the fact that I felt like football wasn't for me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like it was just being pushed towards, and it still is. You know, we work in an industry that pushes content generally towards a type of fan by and large, mm-hmm. FIFA playing generation,
mm-hmm.
you know, because that's audience and those audience are captive and whatever. But you know, the fact is I felt like the football wasn't for me. I felt it was being taken away from me.
Mm. Was that
and
true?
I was angry. I probably not. It was just my kind of, I was very kind of left wing,
mm-hmm.
you know, this is the people's game type. Bollocks, because it is bollocks.
Yeah. Do you believe that? Do you buy into that?
Not
still?
Anymore. I did for a long time, and that fueled a lot of this.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
I think a good point to say with though was in terms of alienation. I mean, you talk about this FIFA generation, which is obviously the young generation of football fans. I think it's safe to say disproportionately they spend more time playing FIFA than they would watching football or getting mm-hmm. involved in the game in other ways. Like you say, the older generation, the ones who have the season tickets.
Mm.
The problem seems to be getting younger fans. Like you're saying, when you were younger, you'd be there creating the atmosphere.
Mm.
There does seem to be that vacuum almost of who nowadays of my age has a season ticket for any club? I don't know anyone.
This is one of the things that 1882 did remedy really, really well. So we focused on games that weren't selling out and on games that were tickets were cheaper.
Mm.
So a game against, I think it's Shakhtar Donetsk, mm-hmm. I think at White Hart Lane.
Yeah.
Dnipro. We chose a block in the Park Lane lower and we sold 800 tickets. And we'll say we sold 882, mm. didn't. Tottenham sold it. Tottenham was the link, but it was an umbrella for people to get under. And the average age was probably, I would say, 21, 22, because everyone could afford it.
Mm.
And it was, we'd say, look, if you're like-minded, if you want to sing, if you enjoy that aspect of football, you know, we're all sitting here, come join us. And I think when we did that and we consistently did it, the dissenting voices kind of fizzled away because they realised we weren't interested in digging anyone out.
Yeah.
We were interested in singing for our football club. And then when you had the players talking about atmosphere and AVB mentioned it in the press at the time, they didn't mention our name, but they were talking about the
atmosphere. Thanks, Flav.
Yeah, well, 1882. But it was, they just commented on the fact that there was an increased atmosphere. And
what did the club think about it? Do you know what the club thought?
Yeah, so we the first home game that we, the first team game we started it in was Hull at home in the League Cup. And the week before, ABB had talked about how quiet the atmosphere had been. So we put the Block J in the East Upper, and the club, when we started buying, because we didn't consult the club, they made those two blocks unavailable for sale.
Wow.
And we thought, I was like, fuck, they're all sold.
Yeah.
Like, this is like literally 6 hours after we started promoting it on Twitter and whatnot. And
you're kicking back, popping the champagne. 1882's won it. We've done it, lads.
Yeah, pretty much. We were chuffed. I mean, it's nice when you have an idea and it resonates with people. And more so, I'm just looking forward to a really good, exciting game where I could sing my heart out for 90 minutes. And then we contacted the club just to check. It seemed fishy, and they were like, "Nah, there's various reasons, but you can't do what you're doing."
But did it give you those reasons, or was it literally like,
yeah,
are various reasons?
Right, so there are reasons. I mean, they're good reasons. In those tiers, which was the expression, the cascade, the way the severity of which the stand is, meant it was quite dangerous for everyone to be standing up, because everyone stands up. Mm-hmm. And historically, people don't stand in the upper tiers. It's the lower tiers where you can kind of get away with it now. And they said, look, it's a safety issue. Harringay, it had happened once before, I think, so I might have missed. I've messed up my dates, but we did it once before, and this was the second game. And the safety board, the Harringay safety board, which were at every single game, had made a comment about it. So that they had good reason for that. But what it did do, forget the negative reasons, it gave us an opportunity to actually open a dialogue with the club. Mm. We did. We sat down. We were involved in, board level meetings with Donny Yates, who's, I think, one below Daniel Levy. I never met him. But, and there's no reason why I should. They were open to it, and once they realised we're not troublemakers, we're not an ultras group, we're not calling ourselves an ultras group, this is simply about singing, and that's it. And you know, there were some issues around standing, because they can't be seen to say, here's your block, here you go. They never promoted us, but they did allow us to do what we want to do, and without being, you know, just the bigger issues came around singing the word Yid. I don't know if you want to talk about that, but a couple of people got arrested for it.
They got arrested.
They end up going to court.
Was that was that the whole furor that happened with Badil? And he, because he was massively against.
He was leading. Yeah.
Sorry. So that happened a couple of years before this, and then it's like a wave. It keeps coming back and forth. And this one happened. I mean,
where's
it
at now?
I mean, it's gone away for a bit.
Okay,
but probably come back. But yeah, we had two lads who was in part of 1882 who got pulled by the police and ended up were essentially the test case for whether or not Spurs fans are in the wrong here. It got thrown out in the end for, you know, ultimately the decision was it's about the intent in which it was said. It doesn't matter where you are with that. That's what the court said.
That sets precedent though, doesn't it, I suppose?
Exactly. Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about that word. I'm sick of saying it. I say it so much. Content.
All right. Okay. I genuinely thought you hadn't heard the conversation you just had there.
No, we've got to keep it clipping along, you know. Yeah. So obviously, myself, you, Flav, you as well, Lawrence, we've all been involved in making content for YouTube football stuff. And we're talking about the game now. You know, stuff.
Yeah. Video stuff.
What is content?
But you know, the way the game is, we're talking about how it's sort of expanded, blown up. So much gets written, so much gets made, so much gets talked about football. How do you feel about sort of working in this? It's not really journalism, but it is sort of creating content around football. How do you feel about doing that every day for your sort of your day job with Ball Street?
I mean, I'm lucky. There's so many people out there who would love to do what I do. Mm. And I'm not going to complain, because essentially each morning I get up and I can get right about football and talk about it. But it does. You do fall out of love a little bit with the game generally. Mm. You know, I don't watch any football outside of work now, because I just can't. I can't. I'm more interested in boxing. if I'm honest, I'm much more interested in watching two men, grown men, barbarically beat the shit out of each other.
Yeah,
when it becomes,
you must have enjoyed
job.
The Battle of the Bridge last season. Then.
Yeah, the perfect combo.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Do you know what? That was probably my favourite game last year.
Yeah,
for other reasons, but the. So it is that time. You guys know, you must know, you get fatigued.
Yeah, it used to be a fun thing you do on the weekend when you're younger. You just watch a football game, you play football. But when it becomes your job, I've sort of stepped back from it, from doing it every single day now, and it is actually a little bit more enjoyable when every now and then you pop in, because otherwise I feel like you get lost in the bubble almost of every day people are churning out transfer rumours, there's all these stories being churned out. I mean, Gary Neville was complaining a few weeks ago about how there's this rush to produce so much stuff.
Oh, fuck off.
But maybe it's not good.
Yeah, no, I just think it's cynical when the guys up at the top who are taking a fucking paycheck from Sky go, ooh, it's a bit of a rush. You're like, mate, you created the rush.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Working for the rush.
They created this whole situation.
Don't
in the first place.
Sit on the inside and go, ooh, you all want to be in on it. Of course we do, Gary. Like, of course we want to have our say, because we don't have enough of a voice.
The thing was, the problem with Gary never saying that was that it was very
critical.
Potentially, but also that it was just like everything that I'm not doing, all other journalism is substandard. And it didn't seem to differentiate or, you know, discriminate. It was just like being produced.
I think he's broadly. I mean, you could definitely broadly say he's correct. I read an article today which was retweeted by the FBAs, and it was literally an article written by a guy who'd done no research on the Sacco situation at Liverpool and had just said that Sacco had fallen down the pecking order. Now, if you're a Liverpool fan, you know that's not the case, and you know the nuance and the detail of it. Mm. But it was basically a hit piece on a guy who actually seems like a lovely guy, and it was about what a useless footballer he was and how he'd had no highlights to his career. Now, if he'd done a second of research, he'd realise that Sacco was the opposite of that. Like, he's a cult figure at Liverpool because he does so much charity work, and he'll appear with a paintbrush anywhere in his hand and probably paint a wall. And that's great. Like, everyone in Liverpool loves him for that.
Yeah.
Just because he's pissed off a manager doesn't mean that he can't be a great guy.
Yeah.
And Klopp's never sort of questioned his character. I think he's just questioned his professionalism.
Yeah, but that's not what... the press and selling stories is always, always about what will make people pick up a paper, what will make people click on a link,
I think that's a fault. That's a straw man, essentially. I don't know the critical thinking term for it, but I think most people are. And I was talking about this on another podcast the other night. Is most producers are caught up with just setting up the cameras, let alone working out what's going to be said in front of the cameras. And the problem then comes that then the people who are on camera then sort of decide what's going to happen, and that you then get into a situation, I don't know how you feel about this, where essentially it's almost like, well, this is good enough for them, sort of thing. Like, we'll put this out and someone will read it, and or someone will watch it. And I feel a bit like football's in a state where it's become ITV. It's just a bit like, well, let's make some content and someone will watch it at some point.
Definitely that has been the way of the land from probably the mid-2000s up to the point where we are now.
From Soccer AM, essentially.
Yeah, he's kind of small bits of information, the least amount of work, and generate the most ad revenue. It's always going to be about money. But I do think it's changing. I genuinely do think it's changing. I think there is a much more... I think people are sick of that. They're sick of the lack of effort. They're sick of being forced down a URL link or a kind of tunnel.
It's
where
it's nice clickbait.
At the end of it, it's just fucking shit to swilling. And yeah. I think with the advent of podcasting and how popular that's become, look, we're having this conversation. This isn't dull. I mean, I love it. Yeah. I mean, I love this format.
That's good.
I have loved it for many years, and people are getting turned on to podcasts now because they want to listen to people, not me, but they want to listen to other people who know what they're talking about.
But do you worry that the same thing will happen to podcasting? I mean, to some extent, it's already happened to podcasting, but do you worry that the same thing will happen to podcasting, that happened to newspapers, that happens... is already happening on YouTube, that's, you know, happened to TV, that it'll get taken down the same route? And essentially,
is it as more and more people get involved and more people create content for that format,
we're being set up in so many ways to be led down alleys to blame the masses. Mm. And I know that sounds very leftist, and we're trying to move away from that. Like, we're trying to go hard right on this podcast. But the point is that, you know, fake news and things like that have been set up in order to give the press a way out. And it essentially gives the press or anyone who's at the top a bit of an easy out. Because, so CNN, they were shit during the election. Didn't report well enough, didn't hold people to account, didn't hold Donald Trump or any of those people to account. And then go, oh, well, it's the fake news. And you sort of go, well, actually, no, because you played your own role and you could have very easily done that. And we too easily blame too many people coming along.
Mm.
Instead of going, well, why didn't you just show the people the good bits?
I think it's about the format, though, of podcasting, isn't it? I mean, it's impossible to bluff it, or it's impossible to fill it for an hour.
I don't know, mate.
We do everything. I don't know,
but you can't. People will switch off. You have to be engaged, and you have to have done your research, and you'll have to at least know what you're talking about. When's the last like there's this one of the things that confused me about Gary Neville's part. We're talking a lot about Gary Neville, but after on a Sunday he does his kind of little review of the game, and it's like 10 minutes long. I'm like, I don't want to listen to something 10 minutes. I've got to get my phone out. I've got to find another podcast on the way.
You want something long to dig into.
Yeah, and I think that's the beauty of podcasts. It's just people are engaged. They've got listening to nothing. It's in their ear holes. They're not getting distracted by everything, and we benefit from that.
It's partly why I like 606, though. I still enjoy 606.
Yes. Well, talk to us about your podcast then. Obviously, The Fighting Cock, the most popular, the best Spurs podcast.
Let's not conflate the two.
Yeah, because they are not.
Those are two different things.
Popularity and quality are very different. But when did you sort of start that? How did that come with that?
All right, so I don't know if we are the most listened to, because the Spurs show is very popular.
I've checked the charts, mate.
Oh, all right.
So what?
He's up there.
Is he? Is he above the Spurs
In terms
show?
Of Spurs right now, this very minute.
Yeah.
Most popular Spurs.
Sure, but are they above us?
Not currently.
Not at this current moment.
Okay, I mean, it's fair enough.
Yeah, but that...
He's a specialist, you know what I mean? To be a Spurs podcast, to be that high...
No, absolutely. Having a popular podcast isn't important. It's not important
Pack up, lads. Let's get up it.
Being able to have a laugh and a drink with your mates and talking about football is essentially what the crux of The Fighting Cock is.
Mm.
It's always been about an element of catharsis. Mm-hmm. Getting through the bad days of Sherwood and whinging about things we didn't like about football. But I think the reason why people listen to The Fighting Cock now is as much about it Tottenham is, you know, the people we have on the podcast that, you know, people want to hear. Rick, we've got my mate Ricky, my best mate, the funniest man I've met apart from you lads. He just makes me laugh when he talks and he tells you stories, and people are listening for that. And when he isn't on the podcast, people are complaining about it. And don't get me wrong, lots of people do listen to the pod and they want to hear the Tottenham stuff as well, but I think a lot of this is sounding a little bit big headed, but there's something about the chemistry between me and my mates that makes us different from other Spurs podcasts.
Because just as you say, you might listen to the front three for like some analysis or some sort of insight, which is what we're trying to do. And I listen to a lot of stuff about that because I'm like, oh, why did that happen in the game? I would listen to The Fighting Cock because I almost, like you're saying, I want that atmosphere, I want that that sort of chemistry between you guys.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about as much about Tottenham as we do our masturbatory habits or porn we've seen or whatever
it
might be.
We've all listened to
them. So look, and it's become a bit of a cliched thing for us to talk about that stuff, but it's what we talk about off cock. Yeah. ultimately, while I don't know a great deal about the way Tottenham play and understand the tactics in which and how Pochettino has built the team he has and gained the success he has, we do bring other people on the pod that do, and they talk coherently. And while the main Fighting Cock podcast will always be, I hate this expression, but a laddish podcast. Mm-hmm. We do have bonus podcasts like this, where Windy essentially leads and talks about tactics. Mm-hmm. I believe that. And he talks about the youth setup at Tottenham. And those are different beasts and feel very differently about. But ultimately, it's just some blokes around a microphone who are comfortable talking because you've done it for 5.5 years now. But there's literally no magic. We fluked it completely.
You say you don't enjoy tactics. Mm. What do you do when you watch the game? Like, I mean, is that you saying you don't enjoy talking about it? You don't enjoy vocalising it?
I like listening.
Can you look at Spurs formation and go, well, he's clearly out of place, or do you just not care about that?
I kind of understand the game. I love listening to people talk about it. Mm. I just don't feel I can. Like, so, I'll give you an example. Mm-hmm. Your audience are going to hate this. Someone was saying that we swapped between a 4-3. 2-3-1 and a 3-4-3.
Correct.
The other day.
Yeah.
Apparently against the... Who did we play?
Chelsea.
Beautiful.
Yeah. At times, yeah. And lovely. I'm looking at, I didn't fucking see any of that. Really? I didn't see any of that. I don't know what people are talking about. Dyer apparently is a sweeper, and when we drop into a 2, and Rose and... Walker sit back and I
don't appreciate that when I'm first watching that, because you're too caught up in whether you're going to win or not and what's happening. Afterwards I appreciate it.
But what I was doing during that game was screaming "you're fucking shit" at Chelsea fans over and over again with my arms in the air. So look, I would never watch the game back. I would never go back and watch a game of football. I'll watch the highlights. I want to see the goals again. Mm-hmm. I want to see Ali run into the crowd. I don't get anything from that. I wasn't really into Warhammer when I was a kid.
Like how you can tanks for analysis with Warhammer. I love that. It's just come out of nowhere, but I love it.
Like, that's what I sort of find interesting is it, and I think it's also down to sets of fans, because if you go to the Palace game, I sort of sit in the upper tier above all those fans.
What, at Palace?
Yeah.
Well, do you often go to Palace?
I've not been this season, but I've been a fair bit.
He gets tickets. He gets himself.
And you love football, don't you?
Love football. So it's fantastic. You can watch a game.
Do you?
I love football.
All right, okay.
I'm dedicated to football.
Good.
But the point is, there's a few fans who sit around you who go, he's out of place, doesn't know where he's going. We should bring him on. He needs to shift in a little bit. And the funny thing is that when the manager does that, then that happens.
Yeah.
But those guys aren't sitting there going, all right, move him to...
No, they just understand. They can see it. Their brain works in a way that they can see what's happening on the pitch, and my brain doesn't.
But I love that someone can... they've not been taught that.
Yeah.
They are just 50-year-old guys who go, mate, that left back needs to be a little bit further in. And they've never gone to school. They've not got UEFA A, UEFA B. But they know...
they know the game.
...what needs to happen. And that gives me such pleasure that there's no barrier to entry there. Do you know what I mean? And I think so many people use tactics as a barrier to entry, or statistics. Mm. And they sort of... And, you know, so if you want to have a conversation with a statistician, they'll sort of go, well, 10 times out of the last. And you sort of think, oh, well, but I can't contribute anything to this.
Yeah.
And that's part of it.
Well, what do you make of... it becomes quite a contentious thing, the use of statistics in football. Obviously, we've got the main man, Statman Dave. He's on our podcast. You know, he reads out the stats every now and then to try and back up what he's saying, and it is very interesting. But
you call him a dick earlier, didn't you?
Cut out.
Dave, is he?
Yeah, Dave.
Yeah, yeah. So, but I mean, before we came on the podcast,
I'm meeting him on Monday.
just in case. We were just talking about before the podcast about these stats about Christian Eriksen being one of the most effective midfielders in the Premier League.
What does that mean?
Since Mata signed for Man United,
contribution.
Oh God, you saw that statistic about Mata today with all his passes and stuff.
Yeah, well, Eriksen has contributed more goals than all of the number 10s in the league, essentially.
What do you mean contributed?
So he's like assisted goals.
Assisted or scored a goal.
Yeah. So in my head,
Are you saying just people who are the number 10?
Well,
like attacking midfielders.
Özil, Eriksen,
Coutinho, Hazard,
and one other. A matter.
What about Dele Alli? Is Dele Alli a number 10?
Yeah, he plays number 10.
Yeah, he plays 10. I mean, he plays...
I thought we were talking about a literal number 10 as well.
I would... Stats are great and they're useful and they do tell you a lot about the way people are playing and they are interesting to listen to.
I want to hear the but.
It's very adventure, isn't it?
Yeah, it's something. It's not the be all and end all. Yeah. And I know that Eriksen, despite contributing all those goals and assists, has had periods of being pretty average. And I think you'd agree with that.
I would wholeheartedly agree.
So which route do you go down with that then? Like, do you want to see? Would you rather see him being the most effective 10 in the league? Mm. And does that give you satisfaction? Or, you know, do you still look back and think, well, you know, so, all those periods I feel let down by you for 20 minutes.
It's a good time at the moment because he's probably playing as well as he's ever played for Tottenham. Since the Cesca game at Wembley, he destroyed...
A triumph.
Yeah. But, I mean, he got accused of being a flat-track bully, and then against Chelsea, he put those two guided missiles onto Ali's head. And I'm kind of getting people, because of the podcast, they listen to it, they're saying, you're digging.
They're hating these stats.
What do you think of now? Yeah, look at these stats. And I'm like, I'm fucking glad I'm right. Wrong.
Yeah.
I got Sissoko wrong. I said he'd never play for Tottenham again after three games because I thought he was that shit. And, you know, he's done
Monaco
well.
That Monaco game was...
Yeah. And you know, so there's statistics are great, and gut feeling is great.
Yeah, there's
just
different ways to
opinion is great. Yeah, and just allow people to have
different ways to appreciate and evaluate a game.
They do also statistics sort of buy into that like that macho side of the game as well, that you can be right or wrong. You know, that someone can bring out a statistic and it validates. Do you know what I mean?
It's easier way to discuss
you try
football.
And give a permanent conclusion.
It is, it's essentially like I'm not saying Dave's lazy because I think Dave does stats in a different way, but I think some stats guys are a little bit lazy because they throw out a stat and go, "There, done," and you're sort of like, "Well, actually, no, that's where it starts."
They're also quite academic as well, and
Dave's not academic.
Is he not?
No, he
is. Okay. So the people I know that are really into stats are Windy on the Fighting Cock. He loves statistics and probably the most academic person I know.
Mm. And I was saying a lot.
Well, I was never academic. I didn't do well at school. I failed my A-levels and dropped out of university.
No,
so,
shit.
Yeah, could you believe it? So I think my brain is more sort of wired to the emotional side of football and the cultures around it rather than what happens on the football pitch. I'm less interested in that. That said, I love listening to people who do know. Like I listen to the Front Three and I enjoy it.
And we know.
And you know.
That is interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, I find it interesting that, and I think it's fair enough, everyone can appreciate it on a different level and can take something different from it. Like you're saying, you listen to the Front Three, I'd listen to your podcast to get something completely different.
Do you find that weird from your own fans, though, sort of being like, I don't know.
Fans?
I find it weird. Like, other Tottenham fans and fans of Fighting Cock.
Your personal fans.
But Flav fans.
I've got loads of fans.
Flavmen.
I've got zero fans.
Flavmen.
Yeah.
Do you find it
the
weird?
The Flavmen. Yeah.
Yeah, the Flavmen. Do you find it unusual that people, like, I was saying this on another podcast the other day. People are obsessed with being right or wrong in football.
Yeah.
And they're sort of like, you're either right or you're wrong.
I think people are.
That's the brilliant quote I was saying to you the other day. Was that the problem with football nowadays is people try to make permanent conclusions from temporary situations. It's always evolving. It's always changing.
Yeah.
You know, last season, Eden Hazard was shite. He should have been shipped off. Now, look at him. You know, it's always changing. And with statistics, I think some people try to make those permanent conclusions when there are intangibles and things that come into it.
Part of the problem, actually, with online content is that actually it's there forever. And that feels
and you're
permanent.
Trying to say,
yeah.
And the difference is
Pep Guardiola is a fraud until 2 months down the line.
But at that point, you can't, and also in video, it's very different. Like, you can't edit a YouTube video once it's out. Do you know what I mean? So once it's out, it's there. And you can edit the title, so you could sort of mess around with it, but you can't edit the content in the video. That's stuck. That's like encoded so that you cannot change that.
Mm.
It would be lovely if you could. Mm. But like, the point with that is that people say, you know, it's tomorrow's chip wrapping. Do you know what I mean?
And
it isn't anymore. Yeah, essentially, like, you could burn all the papers and just get rid of those. Yeah. You know, Hitler tried it; it got very close. but the point is that that would have gotten rid of so many records of things which felt permanent at that time.
Yeah, I think it's just what people want. People want that reactionary content. They want to pick up the papers that say that Dele Alli is finished. Because
I think you're wrong. I feel like it's the opposite. I think that they're told they want that, and therefore that's what they want.
Yeah, it's probably a more
so people go, "You want this?" And then they go, "Bloody want it! Yeah,
I do want it."
I still love, and that's why I think like it would be good to have like and I think you'd be really great on something like this because you're somewhat of a Charlie Brooker-esque sort of slightly snide,
way too much compliment
character. No, but you know what I mean. Like your show is almost a complete rip off of Charlie Brooker's rap.
I watched that and said we should do a football one of these.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so, but the point is that there's no one on YouTube like the BBC. There's no public service broadcaster of YouTube who sort of goes, right, we're going to have some standards and we're going
to... Well, yeah, you're obliged to, you know, hold yourself up to certain standards.
You're not, though, on YouTube.
No, but I'm saying no one is obliged
to. Yeah, and it would be great. And I think to some extent you're sort of like that. Do you know what I mean?
Make yourself the BBC of YouTube. As of now.
What do you see your role as? Because I saw you on Social Club the other day and you were sort of trying to remain above, a certain level of conversation. You were almost dismissive of it to an extent.
Do you think? I hope I didn't come across that way. But I found that I out of three strong personalities, I was the least strong. So I was just less able to engage. But I don't really see myself as having a role, really.
What do you want it?
You must, though. You do have a role. Like, you just do. You can't.
An easier question would be, so, like we were saying, we all do football stuff and
Him. Come on. Content. But make him think.
What do you want to try and say the stuff you make or the stuff you're involved in, like your podcast as well as the stuff you do on Ball Street? What are you trying to say or what are you trying to bring to all the masses of stuff that everyone else makes?
Not trying to do anything. I think you're giving the fighting cock too much importance, or Ball Street at this stage too much importance. We're not.
I love how you do the caveat at this stage. When we hit a million, then give us that importance.
Yeah, but if we hit a million on Ball Street, then fucking, do you know what I mean? Fingers up to everyone, we'll do what we want.
Champagne.
Well, I will. I'll do Talk Balls naked the minute we hit a million.
Right, you can't delete that.
I'm also doing Social Club in my pants if Man United finish in the top four. So,
oh, God.
Yeah. And really? I saw a stat today. They've only got a 20% chance of doing it, apparently, according to stats. Really?
Yeah, but don't worry, because Zlatan's still nailed on for 20 goals.
Honestly, I don't know how to answer that question, because the minute I feel like I'm remotely important enough to have a vision, then I think I've failed.
Not a vision, but, you know, if you're making a video, you're not just sitting down and going, well, maybe you are. You're not just sitting down and going, I'm just going to talk for 2 minutes. You're thinking...
You've never seen Flav work.
How am I going to try and do something... Decent, basically.
It's a hard question. It is a question.
Make him think.
I think the fight. I can't talk for Ball Street because there's a lot of influences, and it's not just me. I don't make a decision on what content we produce. It's kind of a team effort. So I'm not going to claim to do any of that for Ball Street. But for the Fighting Cock, I think it's just make stuff that we would find interesting and entertaining. There's lots of content. There's lots of podcasts out there, and we kind of want to stay true to the principles of which the Fighting Cock was built on, which is about pushing forward fan agendas, talking about important issues like safe standing, like ticket prices, highlighting mental health in men, specifically because male suicide is such a huge issue. We've been campaigning on that for about 5 years. Those are the things that are important to me. And trying to make it something I can live off. Ultimately, the ultimate goal is if you can stay true to the principles of which you created it and put a roof above your head, then that's
the holy grail.
That is the holy grail. I mean,
put a roof above. I mean, you'll be moving out of that box soon, but you know, can you put a roof above your head?
Not yet.
Yeah.
No, not yet.
Not at this stage.
But yes. one day. And it's how do you do that without selling out? Because we've started putting ads on our pod and we've done a read for a betting company.
Is that selling out?
That's always
I don't think so. No, I don't think it is. And if I do think it is, then I'm fucked, because that's the only way you make money in
that's always the conflict, though.
Yeah. But we're still talking about the same issues, and we're talking about it in a way, like the betting side of things, we're talking about it in a way that we think is still funny.
I think that's what most
laugh
people
at betting. The issue kills people.
Yeah. That's what most people...
Oh my God. It's so true. That's why it's funny, isn't it? Yeah.
That is what most people want to do. I think that's what most people aim to do, is to interest them. They want to talk about, you know, what they're passionate about. And that at the end of the day is what makes good content.
Do you think that's part? Do you think that's part of it, though? Some people are sort of convinced, oh, I'm passionate about football, like therefore I will go and, you know, they
mistake.
Mean
it'll be
some
good,
people,
but I mean,
they put themselves on a track, and then they, you know, no one's passionate about 1,000 Degree Knives. Do you know what I mean? Mm. But they're all over YouTube.
They're passionate about the views, mate. You know.
Yeah. So, but then are you
1,000 Degree Knives?
Like,
yeah, that,
you know what I mean? Like, there's something that's missing there.
What I would say, there's two things I want to say. Actually, get in one of the is the best moment of the Fighting Cock was when people were coming up to me at Tottenham or 1882 events, and actually, this is going to sound weird, but we're talking about problems they had.
Yeah,
I don't want to be a counsellor to anybody, and I'm fucking not qualified.
Psycho
flab. Talking bullies, and people aren't going to get that. Not going to watch the program, but
they will now.
They will,
hopefully.
All 3,000 of them.
Yeah, we need that 3,000 every single view we can get
from Brian.
But people, it was such an important thing, this male suicide stuff, and I'm talking about it again for good reason, because men don't talk about their problems. They don't share. They're not programmed to do that. And it's getting it, hopefully more people are open to talking about it now. But I think through the podcast we was able to talk about Tottenham, but also perpetuate this message that it's all right to be open about your emotions and your feelings, and if there's something that's bugging you, then you should talk to someone. And we pushed the Calm charity, and that's the proudest thing. You know, it's been recognised by Calm, the Fighting Cop podcast, to been doing good work. And the other thing I should say is I tried to play Warhammer when I was a kid. That sounded like big to people sure. like stats. I just didn't understand it, is the point.
These are the kind of left turns that the Fighting Cop podcast takes. Anyway, back to Warhammer. I love...
Flat's dad's penis.
Just a video, and you get the one opportunity to meet Pochettino, and it's to play Warhammer with him. And it's,
he would do that.
And it's just the two of you just sort of... It's an Arsenal-based versus this Spurs-based, and that should be a really good video. Imagine Pochettino playing Warhammer.
You've got to find your niche.
Mate, that's clickbait. Let's wrap up just by talking briefly about Spurs this season. Then, obviously, there was a difficult patch, I think.
If that's difficult, then that's good, because you drew.
Exactly, yeah. But, I mean, what sort of you made of this season so far then? Because, like I said, there was a difficult period of form. Now, you know, obviously Spurs have been somewhat resurgent over the Christmas period, beating Chelsea at home, which is a massive win. What have you made of it?
So we came out of a period of 13 games with two wins, all right? That is a sticky patch. If someone you've got designs on finishing in the top four or winning the league.
Wouldn't you have lost those before, though?
Probably. Absolutely. Definitely. Without the, and the mental strength to come out of that and still be able to then win five on the bounce and the sixth in the cup. You know, we are, so all of us, Adam, you're confident because we've won five games. It's been five games. That's all it is. And that's all you need in this Premier League now. You get five games and you're back in it. And we are fucking back in it. We're gonna win this league. Statistically, Chelsea are going to win the league. But what are we in this for if we can't believe that old soft underbelly of Tottenham? That's gone. That's a forget that now. That's what Tottenham used to be like. This under Pochettino, that isn't Tottenham, right? This is a team that could go on and win the league. We probably won't. We probably finish third or second. But believe. But believe in Pochettino. Believe in yourself. Allow yourself to enjoy every win we get.
You wouldn't have spoken like that before.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And that's what's so great. He's given me faith.
You can.
In the team. And you know what is great? Because I used to find solace in the fact that no matter how bad Tottenham are or how mediocre they are, because we were for so long, I've still got that connection with my club, and I've still got my family to share Tottenham with, and my dad, because I love my dad. But we can't hold a conversation about anything other than Tottenham and a bit of music, you know, because we're just two different people. But I love him to bits, and he's a great father. But when we come alive, is about Tottenham. You know, he's been to every single 1882 game we've ever had. By far the oldest person there, and that's about the emotional aspect we have with Tottenham and each other. But now I can have that and all the good shit that's happening on the pitch, because that's what Pochettino's done. You know,
so you got the best of both worlds, essentially.
I really have got everything at the moment, and I'm really scared it's all going to go away.
That is a worry, isn't it? Because Liverpool and Spurs are in similar situations in that sense.
Yeah. The problem is that every team's improving. Obviously, things are looking up for Spurs, and it is a good time to be a Spurs fan. I think we've got more points at this stage of the season than we did last season.
But last season, I mean, you guys really rely on last season, don't you? Yeah. And last season was a shit season for so many people.
Yeah, it was. Man. Well, not for us. It's great, and for Leicester, obviously.
Great guys.
Yeah, how do you feel? I hate Leicester now. I hate every one of their fans. I hate them.
No, I think they deserve that title. Yeah, they can enjoy it.
It's not deserving. It's what they've denied us. That's, you know, they deserve it. Fair play. You played well.
I mean, put it this way: it wasn't just Leicester that denied you that, because I remember you guys didn't finish in second.
Okay.
Yeah, it was ourselves.
Yeah. It really was your own people. And you said you loved that Chelsea game. That Chelsea game is an interesting one, isn't it?
Yeah, I absolutely loved it. I loved it. I mean,
I think because even passion. Though we... Yeah, exactly. Because we threw it away. And like you're saying, that soft underbelly, Spurs would never have crunched into those tackles or shown any of that sort of fight.
It was definitely that. The soft underbelly was gone, and we were willing to leave blood on the pitch and go down to 10 men. And you know, it wasn't professional. But as a fan, it was fucking glorious. Because
especially because it was Chelsea as well.
Because it was Chelsea. Don't get me wrong. And it was as fans of football, when you see it, everybody's sick of players straight batting every question. They're all media trained, and you kind of conduct yourself in a professional manner. And for the 90 minutes and the interviews afterwards, that was all out the window. It was just something to behold, and everyone was talking about it, and it was essentially just another game in the Premier League. But both sides of the pitch, both fans, they had different, you know, Chelsea prevented us from winning the league, and we had something to hold on to, which is kind of Neanderthal.
Quite cathartic.
Instinctual and cathartic, yeah.
It is one of those games. There's one or two a season that will go down as like classic, so you'll watch intense. Yeah. I think that will...
Yeah. There's also something about it, like almost like... that you sort of got it out of your system. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you guys are on a title run this season, I get the feeling that people... There'll be a couple of different angles that you would take. And one of the angles would be, we got this out of our system. Like, we did that last year, and those guys all know what to do this year.
Yeah, as you say, to come that close... is obviously very disappointing, but it doesn't seem to have had... Maybe there was a slight hangover in that, you know, the form was... There was that sticky patch.
Yeah.
But I think to experience that, the players were so young, they would have grown and would have learned from that, and I think it will stand us in good stead.
I love being a Spurs fan at the moment.
I love being a Spurs fan.
It's great, and I love Pochettino.
Perfect time to end it there. Flav, people can obviously head over to the Fighting Cock podcast to hear more of you, which they'll obviously want to do after this podcast. We're shaking out. They can also catch you on Ball Street as well on YouTube.
Yeah, go and watch Talking Balls.
Yeah, that's your show.
Yeah, that's my show. Don't bother about it.
It's great. It's in my top three YouTube shows.
And do you know what? You don't have to subscribe. Like,
It would be nice if they did.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's reverse psychology.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, I've learned that.
Don't
subscribe.
Definitely hit subscribe.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then hit unsubscribe and then hit resubscribe.
Yeah.
That's...
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Does that count as two subscribers?
No, man. No. You're full of shit.
Flav.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Thank you so much for coming on, guys. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you on Monday for the weekend review. See you then.